You're listening to KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned now for Shulta Gale.
Support comes from The Celtic Connection, a monthly paper for people of all backgrounds who enjoy Celtic events and entertainment. More information available at CelticConnection.com.
Support comes from Outworld Brewing, reinventing the brew pub experience through sci-fi fantasy themes. Located in between Highway 287 and I-25 on Highway 119 in Longmont. Offering dine-in, takeout, and delivery. More information at OutworldBrewing.com.
Support for this program comes from Eric Skase. Today is Iris Berkeley's 40th birthday, but the pandemic means she can't celebrate with friends. So Eric wanted to underwrite music programs at KGNU in honor of Iris's birthday. Thank you, Iris, and happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Iris. Thank you for your sponsorship and happy birthday. Roger at the microphone tonight for Shulta Gale. Have some new music again. We are blessed with a wide range of new music coming out of the talent from Scotland and Ireland and England, as well as a new book that has just been released by Helen Thorpe, Colorado's award-winning author of three previous books, and her fourth book is Finding Motherland. And halfway through the show, or thereabouts, I'll play an interview that I recorded with Helen last week, in which she'll talk a bit about the book that touches on her Irish family history, in part, and she'll read an excerpt from it. And then otherwise, we'll just have a bunch of new music. So I'm going to start off with a couple of tunes from a Canadian quintet called the Aerialists, and from a new album that they released in January called Dear Sienna. So the first one is called Jigs, and the second is Lesson in the Losing, and it features Taylor Ashton. So here is Dear Sienna from the Aerialists. Thank you.
guessing and the losing.
Wasn't that nice? Lesson in the Loving, featuring the vocals of Taylor Ashton off the Aerialist's new CD, Dear Sienna. I'm going to move on to a couple of new tunes recorded by Orla Fallon. Many of you will remember Orla as one of the original members of Celtic One, and sings, plays the harp, and she's appeared here a couple of times when she has done her solo act. I think the last time I can remember seeing and hearing her was at the Boulder Theater several years ago. So she's released a new CD, or on the verge of releasing a new CD. It actually comes out on July the 24th, so next week. But she's done a single with a couple of cuts on it, Wild Mountain Time and Roseville Fair. I think that both of these appear on the new album called Lore. And I think I've got an interview scheduled with her next month, and so we'll have an interview that I'll play maybe a month from now with Orla Fallon. But until then, here are two tracks from Lore, Wild Mountain Time and Roseville Fair.
Oh, the summertime and the banjo the way we did at the Roseville Fair. Oh, the night was clear, the stars were shining.
Of lovely renditions, new arrangements, Wild Mountain Time and Roseville Fair. Wild Mountain Time, interesting song, originated from Robert Tannehill and composer Robert Archibald Smith, and it was adapted by a Belfast musician, Francis McPeak, whose name should be familiar to those of you who are big fans of music from Northern Ireland. And Orla says that while in the recording studio doing this particular song of rebirth and renewal, little did I know that a dark shadow would be cast over the entire world and that our lives would change drastically with a global pandemic in the space of a few weeks. And she is dedicating her new album, Lore, to us. And she says that the songs on the album just felt right, given the times in which we now find ourselves. And it is my dear wish that you, the listener, will find solace and joy in these recordings. So you'll hear more tracks from that album next month, as well as an interview with Orla. Now I am going to lead into the interview with Helen Thorpe, and because her father was from Dublin, and her mother was from Cavan, and she spent much of her childhood visiting with relatives in Cavan. And the first essay in her new book talks about the milking of the cows in County Cavan. I thought I'd open with a tune from a band that many of you may be familiar with from their years of playing on St. Patrick's Day at the old Katie Mullins in downtown Denver. Here they called themselves Pinch of Snuff. In County Leitrim, where they play in the Swan pub in Carrick-on-Shannon, they call themselves Rakish. But in any event, here is their rendition of Cavan Girl.
As I walk the road from Killeshandra, weary I sat down. The road around is 12 miles long to get to Cavan Town. Loch Ochter and the road I go on seemed beyond compare. Now I've cursed the time it takes to reach my Cavan Girl so fair. The autumn shades were on the leaves, the trees will soon be bare. The colours on the red-brown leaves are the colours of her hair. My gaze retreats, defies my feet, and once again I'll sigh, for a broken pool of sky reminds me her hour. At the Cavan crossroads, Sunday morning, there she can be found. She seems to have the eye of every boy in Cavan Town. If my luck will hold, I'll have the golden summer of her smile. And to break the hearts of Cavan men, she to me a while. But then Sunday evening finds me homeward, Killeshandra bound. To work a week till I return to a court in Cavan Town. When asked if she would be my bride, at least she'd not say no. So next Sunday morning, I rouse myself and back to her I'll go.
Next up is my interview with Helen Thorpe. Helen is the award-winning author of books that deal with a lot of the problems and issues faced by immigrants. The first book was Just Like Us. That was named one of the best nonfiction books of the year when it was published by the Washington Post. Another book was Soldier Girls, about the experiences of three women in the Army National Guard. That was named Best Nonfiction Book of the Year in 2004 by Time Magazine. Our third book is The Newcomers, about the experiences of 22 immigrants in Denver Public Schools learning English. And her fourth book is called Finding Homeland, and examines issues around food, family, and migrants, and is a collection of seven essays that she has written over the last 25 years, updated to cover everything from history, and she touches on the famine, Irish famine, and touches on the pandemic and the current state of politics. So with that, I will pot up my interview with Helen Thorpe. All right, I'm here with Helen Thorpe, and going to talk with Helen today about a new book that she has released called Finding Motherland. Helen is a prize-winning author from Colorado who's written three previous books, and she's here today to talk about her latest one. So welcome to KGNU and Shoal to Gale.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you, Roger.
You're very welcome. So, Finding Motherland, it's an intriguing title.
Yeah.
What does it mean? Where did it come from?
So, for me, that title was given to me by an editor. So, one of the essays in this essay collection appeared originally in 5280 magazine, and it was about my experience of becoming a mother. And an editor came up with the title, Finding Motherland. So for me, the title actually refers to motherhood and finding my identity as a mother, and thinking about, you know, who my mother was and what kind of mother I want to be. I think probably for other people, maybe they think also about the countries that I've been associated with. So my family is originally from Ireland. My parents grew up there, and they immigrated first to England, where I was born, and then to this country. So I think there's an aspect of immigration mixed up in the title, too.
How did your experiences growing up as the child of immigrants, and then essentially being an immigrant yourself, how did that influence the writing of that essay and then the writing of the other books that you've done?
Sure. Well, so my parents arrived in this country in their early 20s in 1966 with me, and I was a baby. I was one. So I have no recollection of ever living in another country, but technically am an immigrant who grew up with a green card. And my parents had a strong allegiance to Ireland, and they kept imagining they might move back, even though they never did. So when I turned 21, my parents still were not U.S. citizens, but I decided I wanted to vote. And so I became a naturalized citizen. And then my parents later followed suit, and now they are U.S. citizens and vote here and all that good stuff. But I think the experience for me, the immigrant experience for me took place in the summer times when we would go back and visit family in Ireland. And I grew up going back to visit family in Ireland, like either every summer, every other summer, every third summer, as often as my parents could afford. And we would spend 2 weeks, 4 weeks, sometimes longer there with our cousins. I have a lot of cousins, and many, many aunts and uncles. My mom's one of 10 kids. My dad is one of five. dozens of first cousins. So for me, the immigrant experience was that experience of growing up here, living here, being American, but having all my extended family in another country and going back there to be close to them.
Where in Ireland was that?
My dad is from Dublin, the north side of Dublin, the gritty side. And my mom grew up in a rural setting in Ireland in County Cavan on a small dairy farm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What was your favorite experience there? What do you remember the most that stands out about Ireland?
I have two favorites, if that's allowed. So,
of course.
On my dad's side of the family in the urban environment, when we would go, we would start our trips off in Dublin, and my parents would hand us, you know, these big, heavy, old Irish coins back then and say, that's the bus that goes to city center. It says Anlar, which is Gaelic for the center. So head off, have fun, see you later. And we would, you know, we were like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They would just let us roam in the city on the city buses and trust we would come back. It's a very Irish way of parenting. And so those urban adventures that I had with my siblings and some of my Irish cousins just exploring the city on our own as children, it's a very vivid memory, and especially the bookshops in Ireland, the bookstores there. Then we would always go from there to visit the farm that my mom grew up on, and so I have many, many memories of participating in the milking of the cows, going to get the cows. Like, we thought we were helping, but really our family there was just allowing us, you know, family/tourists to participate in their work, educating us.
Indulging us.
But that was really, really memorable, the going to get the cows, bringing them in for the milking.
How much of that experience do you think influenced you to become a writer?
Oh, I'm from a family of storytellers. And in our family, it's a really oral tradition, and so not too many others ended up writing things down, but it's such a family of storytellers. I'm not at all the best storyteller in our family. That's for sure probably my Aunt Kate or my cousin Geraldine or my cousin Caroline. I don't know. They're all so good. If I start naming names, I'll be leaving off some. Anyway, when I was growing up, my mom would tell us stories. She didn't read to us, but she would either tell us Irish fairy tales or legends or stories of her own childhood growing up. And I think also that I was influenced by music and my dad's love of music and lyrics in music, the poetry of some of his favorite musicians like Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen and many Irish musicians as well.
Any Irish musicians in particular?
Mom, we have every Chieftains album, and I mean, they're like the best known Irish band, so it's sort of a cliche to mention them, but my dad went to high school with one of the members of the band, and I just grew up with their music playing constantly in our house.
Any particular songs stick out in your memory of theirs?
I'm terrible with names of songs, but I have some on my phone, and I could, like, look them up for you. But I love when they come on shuffle, or I have a playlist of theirs that I put on.
Well, when you find it, you can let me know.
Yeah.
And I'll add it to my set list.
Okay, I love that.
For when this interview broadcasts.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And it'll broadcast a week from, well, 6 days
okay,
from today.
I would love to do that, because I feel pathetic that I can't come up with the names on my own, but I listen to the music all the time.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah.
That happens. What are you working on now?
So I continue to write essays, and right now I am trying to write an essay about the role that music plays in my life and how uplifting it is. But I'm spending even more time working on a different essay about food and getting food in sequence with the season as food comes along. So I started out this year picking asparagus, and then, you know, through my CSA I got cherries, and now it's zucchini and cucumbers are coming along, and you know, I want to follow the season and talk about the food that I get in sequence. But I'm also trying to talk a little bit about the urban-rural divide and how dependent we are on one another, but even though we don't really understand one another well.
What does CSA stand for?
Oh, sorry, Community Supported Agriculture. So there's a wonderful farm in Kersey, Colorado, called Monroe Organic Farms, and they have they're a CSA, meaning they have members in their farm, and we all give them money in the winter time so they can buy seed and get ready and have the funds they need to plant that year's crops, and then we benefit later from the crops that they grow. Some years you get a tremendous amount, and some years the weather's not so good. So it's always highly variable and always amazing. They do amazing. They grow amazing food.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful way of building and maintaining community.
Yeah.
And that seems to fit with some of the values that you express in all of your books and in the essays in your latest book. Speaking of which, is there a favorite passage from one of your essays that you'd like to read?
Yeah, I would love to. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read from, thank you for asking, chapter one in the collection. Chapter one is called Milking. And I'll describe a little bit of life on the farm where my mother grew up. I'm going to read from the opening paragraphs and then jump to a little bit later part.
Okay.
My cousin Donal woke me up this morning. "I'm running late," he said. "If you hurry, you'll make it to Mass." I pulled the sleeping bag over my head and pondered my state. Not bad, considering. Our cousin Michelle got married yesterday. She's a cousin to me and to Donal, and everyone in the family had done their best to make certain the day was memorable. My contribution had involved traveling here to Ireland from my home in the United States and then drinking a strategic amount of Jameson. "The last time I saw you, you were suspended somewhere between the floor and the ceiling," my Uncle Brendan said when I finally appeared downstairs, "levitating." He was referring to the strenuous hopping I resorted to at around 2 a.m, having abandoned more complicated dance moves by then. Brendan and his wife Kathleen, my mother's sister, were turning my cousin Donald's house upside down in search of their son Cormac's trousers. He had no idea where he'd put them, and he was in bed in the next room, giggling. 15 minutes later, the trousers were discovered in a white plastic bag beside the front door. I arrived in County Cavan yesterday morning, along with my cousin Caroline. We drove down from Dublin to the dairy farm where Donal and Caroline and their three siblings were raised. One generation earlier, my mother was raised here too, along with her 9 brothers and sisters. My Aunt Anna and Uncle James have run the farm since my grandparents died. We stood around and caught up on the news. I related all the important headlines about those of us who lived in the United States, my mother, my father, and my 2 siblings. Now I'm jumping forward. James and Anna appreciated the update. Living here, they keep up with all the news so they can pass it along to every other family member who phones in from wherever they may happen to be. The old-fashioned black dial telephone in the hallway by the front door rings anytime something important happens to any member of the clan, and from there, everyone else will soon hear the latest dispatch. It has been this way all my life, though previously my grandmother manned the phone, and now it is her daughter-in-law Anna who does so. James had on his daily farming attire, a tweed cap, an old sweater, a frayed shirt, and a pair of well-worn blue trousers tucked into green rubber Wellington boots. Everything he wore had been nice once, but had gotten patchy enough to serve as farm work attire. In the yard, Donald pulled on a medium blue coverall over his jeans and t-shirt and then tied a brown plastic apron around his waist to keep himself clean as he milked. The cows were waiting for us inside the milking shed. There are presently 48 cows in the herd, twice as many as there were when my mother was growing up here. Most of them are black and white Frisians. The bull is a Charolais, however, a big white fellow with tight curls covering his massive head and a thick gold ring through his nose. We surveyed each other warily. I could stop there. I could keep going. I could stop there. I've probably been reading for long enough.
No, that's lovely. But that's a nice little hors d'oeuvre to tempt our listeners to pick up a copy of the book and read it for themselves. So where can they get the book?
Sure.
And then is it available in audio form?
Yeah. This book is, I've distributed it digitally, and so it's available as an ebook and as an audio book. If you want to support local independent bookstores, who I think need lots of love right now, you can find a link on my website or on your favorite local independent bookstore website to go to Kobo. And if you buy the ebook through Kobo, by following the link from your favorite independent store, then the indie gets a percentage of that sale.
And what's your website address?
Oh, it's www.helenthorpe.com. It's just my name, basically.
So Thorpe with an E?
Yeah, Thorpe with an E, thank you. And then the audiobook is available on Libro.fm, which is a wonderful site that supports indies in a big way. So if you go to Libro.fm, you can look up their bookstore link, and then you can pick any audiobook you want to buy and any indie bookstore you want to buy that audiobook through. So the indie will get some of the profits of the sale. So you pick a book in a store on Libro.fm, and then the bookstore gets a nice percentage of that sale. They share the profits.
That is really neat.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And that's in keeping and fitting with the ethos of KGNU,
right,
with the independent music,
yeah,
platform that we provide to the community. Mm-hmm. And so with that, Helen, I'll end the interview and I'll play a tune that evokes County Cavan for you, and then your chieftain's tune as well.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and I look forward to reading and hearing your book.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Now a while ago I chanced to roam to the place my great-granddaddy called home. It wasn't much I saw that day, but I learned a whole lot more along the way. I was going to Ireland, retracing my family footsteps, digging up roots. You could call them tubers. Now, the closer to the root of my family tree, more people seemed to look like me. I saw a sign that said Molly O'Brien's Bar. I knew right then I couldn't be all that far. So I went in there and I asked for beer, and he pours out this black stuff. He says, "Cheers. Guinness gives you strength," he said. "And I'll tell you, friends, it's like drinking bread. There's a loaf in every pint." I started feeling strong. I felt like I could sing. Now my whistle was wet, my tongue was loose, when the barman asked me how'd I choose to travel such a long, long way on such a cold and a rainy day. I said I'm going up to Kingscourt Town, that's in County Cavan, just to look around. My great-granddaddy came from there, and I want to see if the old home place is still there. Well, he shook his head up and down, and then side to side, and then he turned around and he said, "A Cavan man, then. You know, a lot of people wouldn't admit to that." Well, I figured I'd save myself a little bit of hassle, booked a room nearby in a fancy castle. I had a hard time getting my dinner there. It was full of these people with light blonde hair. Danish tourists. Two big busloads of them. Now the owner of the place, his hair was black, and when I talked to him, I didn't get much back. His people are what you'd call West Brits. They're the ones that treated my people like dirt. That led indirectly to the Irish Civil War. I didn't realize I'd come back for just a little bit more. That fella's nose was way up in the air, but he took my money just the same. I dreamed I saw the ghost of the one I'd rather have as host. It was Tom O'Brien walking around the cabin west of Kings Court Town and County Cabin. And then the very next day in a hardware store, I met a cousin 10 times removed or more. But he was no apparition. He weren't no haint. He was selling nuts and bolts and paint. And I told him about our family connection. He kind of stood there still reflecting. And I could tell he wasn't much impressed. When he asked me with nary a trace of jest, he said, "How exactly may I help you, sir?" I just bought some nails and got the hell out of there. Then later that day, after some detecting, I found the lane in the rural section, and it matched the picture in my dad's scrapbook, and my heart beat faster as I drove up to look. Then the sun burst through the clouds just then. As I gazed down at the current residence, it was a little sheepdog and an old milk cow. I guess the old home place is an old barn now. It's ashes to ashes, dust to dust, thatched roof to tin roof, and tin roof to rust.
So there you had Helen's favorite tune from the Chieftains, Drowsy Maggie. And she remembered that her father had gone to high school with Paddy Maloney, the Illan pipe player of the Chieftains. Before that, you might have recognized the voice of Tim O'Brien doing his Talkin' Cabin Blues track from his 20-year-old album, actually 21 years old, released in 99, The Crossing, that Tim did back then to reflect the experiences of the Irish on both sides of the Atlantic. And as you might have gathered from that track, Tim is a cabin man also. And Tim has just re-released that album, enhanced the engineering, and great tunes, and still sounds great. So, Drowsy Maggie from the Chieftains, Talkin' Cabin from Tim O'Brien, Helen Thorpe talking about her book, Finding Motherland, and then Cabin Girl by Rakish. Coming up to the top of the hour now, stay tuned for Musica Mundi with George F. starting at 8 o'clock. And taking us to the top of the hour, I'll play a couple of tunes from a new album that was released recently by Aoife O'Donovan. So these are two tracks from the album that were also released on an EP. The EP is called Bullfrog's Croon and Other Songs. So Lakes of the Pontchartrain, and then taking us up to the top of the hour, and Musica Mundi is Pretty Bird. So here is Lakes of Pontchartrain from Aoife O'Donovan.
It was on a bad March morning, I'd been New Orleans a dear. I took the road to Jacksontown, my fortune to renew. I cursed all foreign money, no credit could I gain, and it filled my heart with longing for the lakes of Pontchartrain. I stepped on board a railroad car in the early morning sun. I rode the rails till evening and I laid me down again. All strangers here, no friends to me, till a darker toward me came. I fell in love with a Creole. Said my lovely Creole girl, my money here is no good. If it weren't for the alligators, I'd sleep out in the woods. You're welcome here, kind stranger. Our house, it's very plain, and you never turn a stranger. His Creole girl, Lakes of Pontchartrain. I'll raise a glass to my Creole girl on the lakes of Pontchartrain. Fly away, little pretty bird.
Been listening to Sholto Gale with Roger Hera, KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. Stay tuned now for Music on Monday with George F.
From Outworld Brewing, reinventing the brew pub experience through sci-fi fantasy themes, located in between Highway 287 and I-25 on Highway 119 in Longmont, offering dine-in, takeout, and delivery. More information at outworldbrewing.com.
Support for this program comes from Eric's Case. Today is Iris Berkeley's 40th birthday, but the pandemic means she cannot celebrate with friends. So Eric wanted to underwrite music programs at KGNU in honor of Iris's birthday. Thank you, Iris, and happy birthday.
This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for Musica Mundi.